Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there. Welcome to this new episode. I've uploaded tons of episodes this month, haven't I? Well, here's another one. In this one, I'm rambling about various things without preparing very much in advance. Two things. I haven't edited the audio for this at all. So this will include all the little bits that I would normally edit out, like mistakes and things like that. Second thing, there is a video version of this. If you want to watch me while I'm talking, if you want to see me doing this in the SkyPod, and you can see me doing the whole thing and watch my mouth while it's moving, if you want to watch, you can, either in the app or on the website, but that's only available for the premium subscribers. You can unlock the video online and in the app by becoming a premium subscriber and then just sign in with your login details. Yes, this episode is long, but you don't have to listen to it all in one sitting. You could just listen to a bit, then stop and go to work or college or whatever, and then listen to the rest later. This is much more convenient if you're using a podcast app like the Luke's English Podcast app, which is, of course, available in the App Store on your phone. It's more convenient if you're using a podcast app because the app will remember where you stopped listening, so you can just carry on from that point when you finish work or whatever it is that you're doing. This episode is sponsored by iTalki. If you want to have your own rambling conversations to improve your fluency and confidence with your spoken English, you can find lots of qualified one-to-one teachers and conversation partners there. You don't actually have to travel anywhere to get your English speaking practice now. Just do it at home on Skype with iTalki. You don't even need to leave the house. It's great. Remember, too, that iTalki are offering all of you a voucher worth a free lesson. teacherluke.co.uk/talk is the URL that you need, or click an iTalki logo on my site. If you use my link, iTalki will know that you're a Lepster, and then when you buy some talking time, they will send you the voucher, but only if you use my link. Yep, okay, right, good. So then, let's get started. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Thank you.
Whoa. I'm a random guy.
Rambling round, I'm a rambling guy. Hey, R-A-M-B-L-I-N, apostrophe or rambling. Well, I'm rambling.
Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of Luke's English Podcast. That was Steve Martin and doing a little song that he used to do called, I'm a Rambling Guy. I think that's what it was, what that track is called. I'll probably put a video on the page for this episode so you can listen to the whole thing if you want to. Anyway, hello there. I'm just going to talk in this episode without lots of preparation. That's the idea. Not a lot of preparation. It's always so tempting to prepare all of this in advance. And I've just been sitting here just before starting the recording. I've been sitting here going, okay, come on, Luke, let's record an episode without too much preparation this time. Let's just do one of those slightly unprepared ones. And the thing is, I just keep adding things into my notes. I've got some notes here. It's really difficult not to keep adding stuff to my notes and not preparing so much in advance. But now it's time to stop writing, stop preparing, and just start recording. Because I suppose, like everyone, I have to plan my speeches quite carefully. If I don't plan them carefully, they will end up going off on different tangents and everything will get a little bit out of control. It becomes disorganized. Imagine you are talking to an audience and you're making it all up as you go. Imagine just improvising a whole speech in front of an audience. Imagine that you'll just end up talking too much or not getting to the point. Your ideas will end up kind of going a bit sort of wrong or something. So it's exactly the same thing for my podcast. If I have an episode that requires some careful preparation, then I will write a lot of stuff down in advance. But then sometimes it's fun to just speak without much preparation, like in these rambling episodes that I do sometimes. I mean, I usually ramble on the podcast anyway, you might say. Some people have said that to me in the past, that I kind of just ramble. I'd like to think that my episodes have got a bit more structure than that, but I think the point is that it's difficult for me to be brief, and I tend to, my sentences just carry on and on and on. It's fun to speak without a lot of preparation sometimes, like in these rambling episodes. It's fun, and also it's more authentic for you, because I'm just making up my sentences on the spot. In some case, I have got some notes here which I'm reading from. Some things for this episode are written down, but I've decided to stop writing now and just start talking. So my challenges in this episode, challenges for me, are to just talk without preparing most of it in advance, or at least talk without having prepared everything, and to just keep going, even if I feel like I've made a mistake and I'd like to start again. Just keep going, Luke. That's the other challenge. Because what often happens is, certainly in the first 10 minutes of recording, I'll talk and I'll start the episode, and then something happens, like I'll make a mistake, or I just kind of get slightly confused in what I'm saying, and then I'm like, I'll start again. And then I have to start the whole thing again, but not in this episode. I'm committed to not starting again. I have to keep going. I'm videoing this as well. And as I'm looking at the video, I can see a little red light flashing, which I think means that maybe the audio is coming into the video a little bit too loud. So I need to keep an eye on that. So yes, I am videoing this. The video version will be available for premium subscribers as a reward for being a premium subscriber. That, you know, I said that I'd give you little bonuses and things sometimes. So if you are a subscriber, you'll find the video in the app. And the video will either be in the videos category or in the premium category in the app. You remember how to find the categories in the app, don't you? On the side menu, see there's three little lines on the top, in the top left-hand corner. Tap that, it'll go to the side menu, tap categories, and then you'll see all the categories. And you'll find this video in videos or premium. I don't know yet which category. You can also see the video online at teacherluke.co.uk/premium. You'll need to log in with your premium login details. And that's also where you can go if you want to sign up and become a premium subscriber to get bonus stuff like this, as well as regular premium episodes that focus on teaching you grammar, vocabulary, and pronunciation. That's teacherluke.co.uk/premium to get that stuff. Okay, so rambling. Now, it's been a while since I did a rambling episode, one that's just devoted to rambling, or that has the word rambling in the title. And so some of you might be going, what's rambling, Luke? What's all that then? Well, rambling means basically talking in an unplanned and slightly unorganized way, probably for too long. You can imagine at a business meeting where it's important to give your answers kind of briefly and to get straight to the point in a meeting, and someone saying, so what do you think? And the person going, well, I think that, you know, it sounds like it could be a good idea. Obviously, bearing in mind the different factors, I think that it could be. And the person's like, come on, get to the point. You're rambling. I don't think anyone would actually say that in a meeting. Well, I say that, but I mean, that sounds a bit rude, doesn't it? If you say, come on, get to the point, you're rambling. That does sound a bit rude. Although, having said that, I do remember someone saying that to me in a meeting once, where I was talking and I hadn't quite worked out what it is I wanted to say, but my mouth was going. Sometimes my mouth moves faster than my brain and just words come out without them being fully organized by my head. And anyway, I was talking and the guy leading the meeting said to me, "Come, Luke, you're rambling," which was a little bit, embarrassing, I suppose. And so anyway, I have been accused of rambling. Luke, you're rambling. And my response now is like, yes, I am actually. I am rambling in this episode because that's the point. Rambling, it's sometimes a weakness of mine that I struggle to be brief when I talk. But I like to think that, like Batman, I can turn my weakness into my greatest strength. Because Batman is actually afraid of bats. Did you know that? That's kind of the origin story of Batman, is that he's actually afraid of bats. I think that's in the first Christopher Nolan Batman film. You see that as a child, he falls into a bat cave, and there's loads of bats, and it's really frightening for him. And it's all linked to the tragedy of him losing his parents. But he's afraid of bats. He's got a phobia of bats. So Batman is actually afraid of bats. So he becomes a bat in order to conquer his fear. Bats were his weakness, so he became a bat. Well, he didn't actually become a bat. He just dressed as a bat, which is not the same thing. I mean, it's kind of like a Halloween costume, really. But anyway, he dressed as a bat. And by doing that, he somehow becomes fear itself. He owns the fear. And then he uses this power to fight crime and stuff like that and make really good films. Similarly, my weakness is that I can talk and talk without really getting to the point sometimes, unless I've planned it all in advance. So I ramble, and so I can become Ramble Man. And I can use rambling to my advantage to become some sort of superhero. Although I have no idea how I can fight crime with this ability, except perhaps to give would-be criminals something else to do. Like if I just distract potential criminals by talking to them so that they don't commit any crimes, or just distract them away while the police arrive. So there's some guys robbing a bank, and they're like, "Quick, call a superhero. Call Spider-Man. He's not available. One of the other superheroes. No, they're all involved in Infinity War. Okay, what about the DC universe? Do we have to? Anyway, what about Ramble Man? Okay, Ramble Man's available. Ramble Man, come down to the bank. There's a 211 in progress at the bank." That's like police code, isn't it? There's a 211 in progress at the bank. Get Ramble Man down here to save the day. And I'd come down and the bank robbers are there, like involved in the bank robbery. And I'm like, so, did you see the new Star Wars film? I mean, you know, I quite like Star Wars. Not that I'd call myself a hardcore fan, but, you know, I think I'm more of the sort of fan who is, you know, always looks forward to seeing the films before they come out. But it's never going to be the same as it was when we were kids, eh? You know what I mean? Because, you know, when you're a child, you're sort of, and they're like, and then the police arrive. And they've been arrested. That would be my superhero skill. Just distract people by rambling at them until the police come. Yeah, so if you are listening to this while committing a crime of some kind, watch out. Don't lose concentration because of this episode. Okay. Strange stuff I'm saying. But that, as I said, that's what happens when I don't plan every word in advance. It's the same for you. I'm sure it's the same for everyone. I'm not saying I'm different to anyone, but, you know, these are the things that happen, especially when you're doing a podcast and you have to keep talking. It's just like Alan Partridge. It's exactly the same thing. That's one of the reasons why that character is so brilliant, because it's true. When people are broadcasting and they have to keep talking, sometimes they end up talking about some pretty weird things. Anyway, maybe the superhero analogy doesn't really work. I don't know, but it was worth a try, I think. So anyway, I have got some things prepared. It's not utterly unprepared. I have got a few things prepared. So here is a rundown of the stuff that I'm going to ramble about in this episode. So first of all, I'm going to talk about my French test. I had a French test recently. I'll talk about that. My recent duck-related error. I made a duck-related mistake. Any idea what that is? Well, you'll find out. Some responses to the Alan Partridge episodes. I wanted to just sort of respond to some of the comments that I'd got and share some of the comments that I got relating to those episodes. Also, some responses which came into the website to me talking with Amber and Paul about the Russian Comedy Club video. I got lots of comments in relation to that episode, so I'd like to at least summarize some of those things. Also, I'm going to talk about some news, like the fact that I'm going to be moving out of the SkyPod. That's this room where I record these episodes. We're moving, and so it's going to be good. I'm going to have to say goodbye to the SkyPod. It really is the end of an era, so I'll talk about that later on. And also, just a couple of questions, like how's your daughter and how's your wife? Because these are the things that apparently people always ask me. They want to know, especially how's your daughter? So I'll tell you a little bit about that later on. Before we do any of that, though, I want to give a shout out to the Orion team. The Orion team, that's the transcript collaboration team. I'd like to say hello and thank you to everyone involved in that team. There are people who work together to transcribe episodes of this podcast. So I'd like to just mention you and say thank you for the work you're doing. But in particular, I'd like to mention a listener in the comments section who's very active in the Orion transcription team called Syntropy. I don't think this is the person's real name. It's like a username that they've chosen. Syntropy, by the way, I don't know if it's a real word. I think it's sort of a fairly obscure word, but basically you've got entropy, which is when things kind of break apart, let's say, and syntropy is about when things come together and become organized and concentrated and so on. So Syntropy is quite a nice username. And certainly this is what Syntropy has been doing in the transcription project, organizing things and helping things come together. So here's a message from Jack from the comments section. And the message goes like this. Dear teacher, I'm writing to let you know that my acquaintance from the transcription team, Syntropy, has single-handedly transcribed 2 long episodes of the podcast. I just thought that it would be nice of you to thank him in the next episode of the podcast. Well, thank you, Syntropy, for your outstanding work, because that is a lot of work. 2 long episodes. I mean, it takes long enough to record and listen to them, let alone actually transcribe every single word like that with your fingers. Tickety-tickety-tick. That's the noise of typing, apparently. So thank you for doing that, Syntropy. Syntropy has single-handedly transcribed 2 long episodes of the podcast. That is amazing. Normally, in the transcription project, what you do is everyone just does a few minutes. So the whole episode is broken up into chunks of 3 minutes per chunk. And people just do, you know, they just do 3-minute chunks. You don't normally do the entire episode. It's far too much work. It's like really intensive work transcribing. That's why, you know, the episodes get broken up into 3-minute chunks. And, you know, when everyone works together and does their chunk, the episode gets completed quite easily. Is this even recording? I've just realized that it's not recording into the audio. It's not. I didn't press record, but it's all right. I've got the video recording. Oh my God. Sometimes doing this is quite stressful. You know, when I've got the video recorder going and the audio, it's just, it's too much to consider, too much to think about. I've got to think about the pressing record on this. I know it's a basic thing, but it's so easy to forget. I've got to think about pressing record on that and getting the levels right on my audio player, which you can see there, audio recorder, and also pressing record on the video player and getting the levels right on that as well. And I didn't press record on the audio player, but it's okay because the audio is being recorded by the video device. It's just complicated, isn't it? Anyway, thank you, Syntropy, and thank you to all the members of the Orion transcription team. Listeners, you can check out their work and get involved too in the transcription project by visiting the website and clicking transcripts in the menu. In the menu of the website, you'll see transcripts and then transcript collaboration. All the information you need is there, including how it works, the rules for it and everything else, and all of the Google documents with all of the transcriptions in them. Okay. It's also extremely good practice for your English. to transcribe audio. It really makes you focus on every single word. And working with the team, you see, what you do is you transcribe a bit. If there's something you really don't know, you just have no idea what's being said, like if it's just a noise to you, you can leave a line. And there's a time code as well. You put a time code next to the bit that you don't know. And then one of the other members of the team will come in and proofread your work, and they might be able to help you and identify what word it was. Like someone like Jack, for example, has got very good listening skills, and his English is actually very, very good. And he's able to proofread transcripts. You know, there are many members of the team who I should mention. Who work, you know, varying levels of English. It works together great, and there are lots of transcripts. Listeners, you could just go and check out the transcripts for episodes if you want. Website, transcripts, transcript collaboration, and you'll find the folders there. So thank you, Syntropy. In fact, here is a comment from Syntropy that I got the other day, just by coincidence, and I thought it was worth sharing on the podcast. So this is the comment from Syntropy, and I'm just going to read it out to you now. Hi, Luke, and hello, Lepsters. Luke, I just wanted to say thank you so much. I'm a long-term listener, although I haven't been able to catch up with all of the episodes. Luke's English podcast has been my main resource for learning English, and thanks to you, I've managed to score C1 level in a placement test. C1 is advanced level. That's great. You know, you've got A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, and C2. C2 is like the holy grail. That's proficiency level. It's very difficult to get to C2, depending on the situation that you're in. But anyway, C1 is a very respectable level to get to. It's advanced. Well done, Syntropy, really. I mean, I know because I'm attempting to learn French. I'm not applying myself to it as I should, as many of you are applying yourselves to English. But I know what C1 means, basically. So Syntropy continues by saying, I travelled to Manchester in order to study English for a couple of months. Before the trip, I'd listened to your Alan Partridge episodes. When the teacher asked me about my method for learning English, you were the first person that crossed my mind. And the teacher got really surprised, since very few learners of English really listen to podcasts. Then I mentioned Alan Partridge, and we even had a small talk about comedy. If it wasn't for Luke's English podcast, I wouldn't have such knowledge on British culture. For example, British culture, for example, not to mention other things like pronunciation and vocabulary. You definitely helped me to achieve a high level in this crazy language. In the end, she told me that my level was actually higher than advanced. You have no idea of how happy I got after what she said. And I must say that it was pretty much all due to you and your podcast. I don't agree with that, Syntropy. I think maybe my podcast has helped and it's provided you with a resource. But I think all credit has to go to you, right? I mean, listeners, I think although I'm here to help and I'd like to try and make the process easier, I think if you do get to that level, it can only be down to you. Just in the same way that, for example, if I'm not making progress in French, it's only my fault. I can't blame anyone else. I think in language learning, you can only really make progress if you take some level of responsibility for your learning as an adult. So anyway, Syntropy, I appreciate the flattering comments, but I think, you know, I think you're the one who is responsible for your progress. Syntropy continues by saying, I remembered that rambling chat with Moz, from an old episode, in which you talked about a similar experience you had with a student who also listened to your podcast. Ha ha. That's right. I talked to my friend Moz about that. I said that I had a student in one of my classes who just happened by coincidence to be a listener to this podcast before she even realized she was in my class. So she turned up in my class and I was teaching, and I said, oh, by the way, I've got a podcast. And this student was like, oh, wait a minute, are you Luke from Luke's English podcast? And I was like, yeah. And so she was a listener, but also I noticed, just, I don't know if it's because she was a listener or that she listened because she was a good student. I don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. What comes first? A student listens to the podcast and so they become a good learner of English, or a student listens to the podcast because they're a good learner of English? It's hard to tell which causes the other one. I think they're probably mutually beneficial. That the more you listen to podcasts, not just this one, any podcast for learners of English. The more you listen, the better a student, the better student you become. And so they kind of complement each other. And I can't thank you enough, Luke. Also, a special thanks to the brilliant Orion team for transcribing the episodes. Keep it up. There's definitely method to the madness. Cheers, Syntropy. I like that line a lot. There's definitely method to the madness, because I wonder sometimes. I mean, as a teacher, having been a teacher for 17 years, I know kind of what it's like when students come to your school. A lot of them require convincing. They need to be convinced that there's a method at work. They need to be convinced that there is some level of pedagogical methodology behind what you're doing. And I wonder, when people listen to this podcast, they just think it's just a guy rambling. It's not. There's method to the madness. There is. So thank you, Syntropy. It's very nice to hear your report, and I'm very happy that you have done so well with your English, and well done to you and all the rest of you as well. You know, give yourself a pat on the back, really. Oh, a little scratch of my back there. Give yourself a pat on the back, just generally, for making the effort to learn English and push yourself. A lot of people just don't. A lot of people just want the simple solution. They just want the kind of little package. They want, you know, English to be like a hamburger that you buy from McDonald's. I'll have one hamburger, please, and it's given to you over the counter. Boom, you eat it. Problem solved. Well, English is not like that. It's not like a hamburger. I mean, you know, I don't know if any of you thought that English was like a hamburger. Is that something that you've been thinking about while going around in your life? Like, go down the road, get the bus. Yeah, English is just like a hamburger, isn't it? I don't know if you've been thinking that. Anyway, just to confirm, English is not like a hamburger. Learning a language is not like a sandwich. It's not just some quick thing that you do and then problem solved. It's much more of a long-term process. You have to commit yourself to it. There is no single quick solution. It's just something that you have to get into your life. And it helps if you develop a personal attraction to the language, and you have to be compelled from inside you. No one could make you learn a language. You can only do it from within yourself. The motivation has to come from within you. And motivation is maybe the most important thing. Motivation, so you actually want to do it, and then time and practice. Practice over time, and eventually the effect of that will long-term be progress in the language. That's the idea. Positivity, motivation, and resources are important, because you need to find things that are going to help your motivation. So I hope that Luke's English Podcast is a resource that is helpful as part of that process. Right, I mentioned before that I'd taken a French test. So Syntropy just mentioned I think Syntropy is a he. Sometimes it's hard to tell when my students are male or female, when they don't say if it's just a name. I think Syntropy is male. I had an experience once as an English teacher when I had a brand new class. And this is back in the days when I was working in London in a school on Oxford Street. And it was not a bad school, but sometimes those schools, they pack your classes full of students, and they just, you know, the school's just like, okay, keep the students coming in, and they're just constantly new students coming into your class all the time. Anyway, I had this big class. It must have been about, I guess there were about 16, not that big compared to some of the classes I have taught. But anyway, I had about 16 students in the class, and it was day one. And a typical day one activity is you get students to get in pairs and quickly interview their partner and then introduce their partner to the group, because it gives them a chance to immediately start speaking. You can listen into their conversations and write down some errors and correct them afterwards. And they get to know each other. You know, it's important to help the group bond together. Also, they get a chance, they get practice of speaking to one person and speaking to a group of people. It's, you know, it's good practice. So anyway, I got them all in pairs. Now, there's one student who arrived a little bit late, and honestly, I couldn't tell if the student was male or female. Sometimes you meet people who it's just not clear if they're a boy or a girl. And so I was trying to teach the class, you know, day one, it's quite a stressful day. You're trying to make the right impression, trying to keep things moving, trying not to ramble too much in your introductory bit about the course and stuff, trying to keep it, you know, sharp, short and sweet. And so I'd put them all in pairs, and this new student arrived, and he or she had no partner. So I said, okay, don't worry, I'll talk to you. So I interviewed this person while also trying to pay attention to everyone else. And we interviewed each other and stuff. And then it was time for us all to introduce the people to the group. And I still hadn't worked out if it was a boy or a girl. It's so embarrassing. So embarrassing for me, so embarrassing for them. Anyway, I don't know how obvious it was, but when it came to my turn to introduce the, I can't remember the person's name now. Let's call him or her Bob, okay? Bob's a male name, but anyway, let's say Bob. The thing is, when I was introducing him or her, I couldn't say him or her or he or she or his or hers. You know, I couldn't use any of those pronouns. And I didn't want to say they, because they're all going to think that would be strange. Like, they, there's only one person. They is actually a pronoun which is like non-gender specific, by the way. But it's only usually used when you can't actually see the person there, or if in some cases of transgender, you know, all that stuff. But anyway, so I was introducing Bob, and I just couldn't say he or she, because I didn't want to commit to one or the other. So I was like, Bob is from blah, 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 and Bob does this, and Bob likes this, and Bob, and it was just really obvious. Anyway, that was embarrassing. Anyway, Syntropy, I think, is male. Fine. Okay. I feel like I've made it awkward now by telling that anecdote. I didn't mean to. Let me move on swiftly to the French test. So I had a French test. Syntropy told us about having a level check in Manchester at an English language school and getting C1 level. Nice one. Well, I had a French test as well this summer. Now, why did you have a French test, Luke? Well, I had my French level check level test because I'm currently in the process of applying for French citizenship. That's right. I'm going to get a French passport. I'm going to become French. Yes. I'm going to become French. Now, I'm actually going to get dual citizenship, dual nationality. So I will be both British and French. So I'm not going to lose my British citizenship. I will be 100% British, but I'll also become legally French too. Why, Luke? Why are you becoming French? Well, I live in France. I live in Paris. And also, basically, Brexit. Brexit is Article 50 comes into effect on the 29th of March next year. Article 50 is basically the clause of the European Treaty, which dictates how Britain is going to leave the European Union. Basically, we're going to leave on the 29th of March, as things stand right now. We don't know what's going to happen. Maybe there'll be another referendum. I find that hard to believe. I hope it'll happen. But I find it hard to believe that there will be a second referendum on this decision. There should be, because frankly, Brexit's a bloody disaster. I mean, I've been into this in detail with my dad on the podcast. There will be some people listening to this who still think that Brexit is somehow a good idea, maybe based on some idealistic notion that Britain's going to take back control of its borders and it's all about British sovereignty and all this sort of thing. Britain is not going to take back control. It's going to be out of control. It's going to be chaotic and it's going to be messy, costly, dangerous, and generally bad for everyone. Even if you're one of these guys in pubs who think that this is all about Britain taking back its empire and making Britain great again, I don't know what planet you're living on. You're on Cloud Cuckoo Land, Alice in Wonderland. In reality, it's an extremely dangerous and reckless thing to cut all of those diplomatic relations and all those many other connections that we have with our neighbouring countries, the trade agreements, the safety standards, the security agreements, the scientific alliances that we have, all of that stuff. it's a terribly bad idea. But because of Brexit, I don't know what my status will be on the 30th of March. And it's quite possible that the British government and the European Parliament or the European Commission won't make an agreement. They just won't be able to make a satisfactory deal. And so there's a good chance that Britain will just crash out of Europe at the end of March, and there'll be no deal. And so things like my status as a British citizen living in the European Union will be unknown at that point. Now, I don't think that they're going to make me go back to England. And they're not going to, you know, send the guys, they're not going to send round, you know, guys with big boots on and riot gear. The stormtroopers are not going to be sent round to my apartment, and they're not going to grab me and kick me out. I hope not. Anyway, it would be a bit strange if they did that. Unnecessary. But the fact is, we just don't know what's going to happen. So my status is going to be up in the air. And what my, you know, at the very least, I'll have to do lots of annoying applications for temporary residence visas and stuff like that. And I just don't want the hassle, and I don't want the uncertainty. So the best way is to secure my right to stay here with my family, my wife and my daughter, and to continue living the life I'm living. So I don't have to leave them and go back to England and like live with my parents or something. The best way to do it is just to become French. So vive la France, vive la République. I'm going to become French. And British, though I'll have the two passports. So becoming French and keeping the EU passport will just mean I don't have to queue up for a long time at the airport or the Eurostar, because the people who don't have EU passports, I imagine, I don't know what the French border police, how they will react to British people coming through. Maybe they'll make us wait in a room. I don't know. We just don't know. So it makes more sense for me to just become French. Now, becoming French is complicated because there's a lot of administration, lots of documents need to be provided. I need to provide birth certificates for me, birth certificates for my mum and my dad, my parents' marriage certificate. All of those things have to be original documents, and they have to be legalized, like stamped by a proper authority. And so that means I've got to buy the certificates online, have them sent to me, then get them legalized by sending them off. It's very costly. And then I've got to jump through lots of other hoops, like I've got to do this application form, I've got to do that, I've got to provide different types of proof of address and copies of my passport, I've got to pay a certain amount of money, I've got to tick lots and lots of boxes. And one of the things I've got to do is I have to prove that I have a certain level of French in order to get citizenship. Now, the base level that the requirement that they need is B1 level of French. Okay. Now, for listeners to this podcast, you've probably got at least B1 level. You've probably got B2, C1, maybe even higher than that. I think generally my podcast, most of the people who listen to this, in fact, if you're still listening to this now, after nearly 40 minutes, I think you've definitely got B1. You've probably got B2. You might well have C1 level. If you're able to keep listening and you haven't just given up or fallen asleep, then you've got at least B1 level, I think. Anyway, B1, intermediate level, that's what I needed. And you'll know that if you've heard my other episodes where I talked explicitly about my experiences of learning French, you'll know that my level, well, I'm a bit conflicted about my French, and I feel a bit ashamed of my level of French, because I've been living here for nearly 6 years now. And so obviously, of course, my French should be perfect. I should be C2 now, right? Well, except, you know, what I always say is that my French is not progressing very well, but my excuses are getting better all the time. I'm fluent in excuses now. You know, because I work in English. I speak to my wife in English. She speaks very good English, so we speak English at home. I speak English with my daughter. Well, not that she speaks much English back to me at the moment. It's just dad, mainly. Yeah. Dada, I mean, that is kind of English. She doesn't say papa. Anyway, I speak English at work. I speak English when I'm doing my stand-up comedy. I've got French friends and stuff. But often their English is better than my French often, so we end up speaking in English. I've got lots of excuses. You should never make excuses when you're learning a language. You've got to take responsibility. I've got lots of excuses. I also take responsibility for the fact that I'm not applying myself in the many ways that I could. In all, you know, all the different advice that I give to people on my podcast and in my language classes about, you know, ways that you can improve your language. I mean, it's that's why I feel ashamed, because I feel like a hypocrite that I say all these things and I don't actually apply them to myself. Ah, dear. Don't judge me. Don't judge me for it, please. Be kind. Be kind. What was I talking about? That's it, the French test. So I needed to get B1 level French. So I applied for a test in a local school. And the test date came along. I did some practice at home. I was doing basically, I had to do two parts of the test. I had to do a speaking part and a listening part. And I was doing my listening practice. My listening is better than my speaking. That's normally the case, isn't it? Anyway, but my listening is definitely better than my speaking, because I spend quite a lot of time listening to people speaking French, obviously, just around me. And on television and all that stuff. So my listening's pretty good. And I was doing practice listening tests at home online. And I was getting like C1 in the listening part, which amazed me. I was like, really? I'm really getting C1? Because to be honest, in my day-to-day life, I quite often feel completely lost. I mean, I'm often completely out of my depth. If I'm at a dinner party and everyone's talking, it's like I'm watching a game of tennis. And then after a while, I don't know where the ball is anymore. And I'm just, what is going on? I don't know. And then my brain just starts to shut down and I start to fall asleep. It's terrible, especially if I've been drinking wine. So, you know, I'm used to doing a lot of listening, but I'm also used to being completely out of my depth and not understanding what's going on. So I was doing the practice test, getting C1 in the practice tests for listening, which was great. But I was worried about the speaking part. I'd practiced the speaking part of the test with my wife. We had some sample questions and things, and I was going through it. So anyway, test day, go down to the test center. I felt, wow, this is weird. It's like the shoe is on the other foot. Normally, I'm the one who's giving the test. I'm the one who's examining people's level of their the target language. But in this case, here I am. The tables have been turned, and now I am the learner. It's like that scene in Star Wars, you know, once I was the master, now, what is it? Once I was the learner, now I am the master, or something. Oh, I don't know. There's always a Star Wars reference, if you can be bothered to make it. So anyway, I went down to the center, and before the test, I was kind of like trying not to be stressed. I was trying to think of all the things I'd told my students in the past, of like, just relax, just before the test, just, you know, maybe listen to something in English before you start the test. Maybe just run through some of the answers in your head, but make sure you get plenty of sleep. Make sure you eat well, you know, drink some water, have some coffee, whatever it is you need to do, but make sure you relax. So I was doing that. I was relaxing and stuff. And I walked down to the school, and it was a hot day. This was in July or August. And it was hot, and I was trying not to sweat, trying to keep my cool. It came to be my turn. So I went into the exam room, empty classroom, just one girl. She was younger than me. She must have been in her 20s, like sort of fairly, she looked like she was a fairly new teacher or something. I don't know. But anyway, she was the one who was doing the test with me. And she was recording it as well. The recording was going to be sent off to some other test center to be examined by another examiner. And four parts of the test. Yeah. Part one, just general chat, like kind of introduce yourself, little small talk questions. No problem. I was okay with that. I did that well. I've got about 10 minutes of good French in me, right? 10 minutes of good French-ish, 5 to 10 minutes of good French. I say good French, I mean, I can survive for 5 to 10 minutes. I find that after 10 minutes, everything starts to crumble, because you tend to usually move on to more complex subjects after that amount of time. And, you know, the conversation usually becomes a bit more abstract or whatever after about 10 minutes of small talk. And that's when I'm not really capable of doing it properly. And also, I usually run out of things to say after 10 minutes. I mean, I'm quite good at just saying who I am and where I'm from and what I'm doing and, you know, those basic things. But then I run out of French after 10 minutes, and it just the whole thing starts to crumble. So anyway, the first part was fine. I probably made lots of mistakes and things, but, you know, I was okay. The second part was a kind of role play situation where... was it three or four parts? It doesn't matter. The second part was a sort of role play. And she said to me, okay, I'd like you to imagine that I am your friend and I've just got a new job. And you have to just ask me lots of questions about the job. And it was timed for about 2 minutes. And so, she gave me a little instructions on paper. And it's like, you know, ask about the pay and the conditions and the staff and all that stuff. So I was basically able to do that kind of, oh, wow, you've got a new job. Hey, using the right words, because in French, when you're talking to a friend, you use tu instead of vous. And so I was using tu, and I think I was conjugating the verbs correctly for that and all that stuff and being quite natural. And I was imagining I was speaking to a friend and I was probably using little bits of informal language. And that was basically okay. I don't think I was great, but I managed to get through it. The third part, that's when everything started to crumble. I mean, everything crumbled quite severely in the third part of the test because what happened? So she said to me, okay. Yeah, that's it. She said, I'd like you to talk for a minute. Was it a minute or 2 minutes? I can't remember now. But I had to talk on my own for a while. And she said, what are you going to talk about? And I didn't understand the topic. I didn't really understand the question. That was the problem. What I understood was, she said, the question was, do you think, like, you have to talk about, what was it now? Yeah, is it more difficult for adults as they get older to change their lifestyle? Does it become more and more difficult for adults to change their lifestyle as they get older? What do you think? So I had to like construct a minute or two's worth of discourse, a little sort of speech about this subject. That's what I understood, she'd said. What she actually said was, is it difficult to change your eating habits as you get older? Because she used a word that I didn't know. And the word was alimentation. Now I know what it means. It basically means diet or eating habits. It's a fairly common word. I had heard the word before, but I just didn't really know specifically what it meant. I didn't realize that it meant basically food and eating habits. So I was there attempting to talk for a minute about how it's difficult to change your lifestyle. And I don't know how I managed to blag my way through for about 40 seconds, but I was getting really hot and I was pouring sweat. I mean, suddenly my forehead just turned on the sweat and I was just, drops of sweat were running down my face. It was really hot. I mean, it was the middle of the heat wave in summer this year. And I dressed up in a shirt. I wanted to make myself look presentable. I was wearing a shirt and everything and smart trousers. And I was just boiling, pouring sweat dripping off my nose. It was incredibly embarrassing. I was trying and I felt very self-conscious. She was sitting right in front of me. And I kind of, it all broke down and I basically was saying things like, well, adults find it quite difficult to change their lifestyle as they get older. For some reason, it's easier for children because they're more adaptable. But for some reason, and I don't know why, adults find it harder to change the way that they live as they get older. And then I kind of kept making that same point over and over again and doing lots of and sweating. And then she said to me, okay, but what about alimentation? Meaning, what about, you know, eating habits? And I was like, and I said, you know, en fait, I don't know the word alimentation. What does that mean? And she was like, oh, it means nourriture, eating. And I was like, ah, right, okay. And then time was up. And so, you know, I just thought, oh, God, that was absolutely a disaster. I mean, I dried up. I wasn't able to keep going. And plus, I just looked like a disaster zone. It must have been very awkward. And so time was up. It was actually just three parts, I remember now. Not four. You get four parts in Cambridge Advanced Certificate in the speaking test of CAE. But in my French test, three. And so it was finished. He pressed stop on the recorder. And she seemed fine. I was there crumbling, like, you know, having a crisis. And she was just fine. So she probably, you know, it's just like just another person struggling with part three of this test. Next, please. And, you know, as we were, you know, we were stopping, I said to her in my bad French, I said, what I understood was, oh, part three was hard. Whew. Part three was difficult, I said. And she replied, oh, no, it's okay. We have a lift in the building. Which is just absolutely typical of the interactions I have in French, where I say one thing and the person just completely misunderstands what I've said. I've probably pronounced a word wrong, or at least I've just been completely incoherent, and they've just used the context to work out what I'm saying, and it's just totally led them in another direction. And she obviously just saw me pouring with sweat, and she thought, well, clearly the only thing that he could be saying now is that he's very hot and he has to climb, he now has to walk down three flights of stairs. That's what she must have thought, even though we were on the second floor of the building. I don't know. So I said, oh, part three was hard. And she said, yeah, but it's okay. You've got, we have a lift. She thought I said, oh God, oh, I have to walk down three flights of stairs now and I'm so hot, which is not what I said at all. So I left with mixed emotions. Because I thought, oh, God, I think I'm going to scrape it. I think I could scrape through with a B1. Because I did okay, basically, in parts one and two. Part three was definitely a disaster. But I think I'm probably going to survive. The listening part was actually earlier on at another date. And remember, I'd been getting C1 in the listening at home. When I got there in the room, some of the other candidates were chatting to each other in French, and they're all brilliant. So there was me thinking, oh God, they're all much better than me. All normal thoughts. This is what everyone thinks, right? I'm sure that half of my students, when they've come to my language classes or come to language schools where I've worked, on their first day, they're probably going through a similar process of like, oh, everyone's much better than me, I'm rubbish, and stuff like that. It's very easy to fall into that kind of mindset when you're out of your comfort zone. You start to panic and you start to think that you're worse than you are. And I'm often very negative about my French. I have to say, I often beat myself up about it. I don't know why. I think it's because, oh, anyway, never mind. So the listening part. So I sat down, it's all done on a computer, and I was going through it. But for some reason, just having other people in the room and being in a different place, it put me off. Like, I get self-conscious when there's other people there. I wasn't able to focus properly. So I was going through each part of the listening, and it goes pretty quickly. You have to read a question. You have to read a question, look at all the multiple choice options, and listen to the audio all at the same time and choose the right option. Multiple choice is usually pretty good. You know, multiple guess, they call it sometimes, because you can kind of just guess your way through. I don't know what it was, just that extra factor of being out of my comfort zone meant that I was right on the edge of understanding everything. It was just like, I don't really understand that. I'm clicking that, but I'm not sure it's the right answer. In my practice tests, I was usually pretty sure of the right answer for most of them. It was like 20 questions or 30 or 40 questions. I can't remember now. I've just wiped it all from my memory now. But, I was usually, you know, when you can be pretty sure you've got the right answer, you know, and you can think kind of clearly, but I just wasn't able to think clearly. So I was really out of my comfort zone. I felt like I wasn't sure about any of the answers, and it was like, oh God, I'm not sure about that, but I think it's A. Oh God, here comes the next one. Concentrate, concentrate. Still can't seem to penetrate this listening. And so I left that thinking, oh no, I could easily have got them all wrong. When your test is finished, it tells you what your result is. So at the end, the final screen tells you the result. And I got B2. What a relief. I actually got B2. Not as good as I could have done, but not that bad. B2. I later worked out that I was right on the borderline of B2 and B1. 1 point difference between B2 and B1. And I was that 1 point. If I'd got 1 point less, I would have been B1. I mean, B1, it was enough to pass, okay? But I knew that I needed to get a good result in the listening, or I potentially would fail the whole test. So I got B2, thank God. And I was looking at all the other screens as I went out, all the other screens – in the room, and I could see all of them. C2, C2, C2. I was like, what? Who are these people getting C2 in this test? Probably people applying for French citizenship like me, but they've been living in France for ages and who'd actually applied themselves to learning the language. Or maybe they'd married some French person and, you know, French was the language of their household. I don't know. Anyway, I just kind of felt, oh God, I got lucky. I managed to survive that one. I dodged that bullet. And then the speaking part, well, I had to wait a few weeks for the result to come in. And then I got the results, I think in the beginning of September. And the result was, I passed. Hey, I got B1 overall in the, excuse me. I got B1 overall in the whole test. I passed. I got the required thing. I got the certificate. So I did it. And you know what? It's like the, maybe the first positive thing that's happened to me with French, I think. First proper positive experience I've had with French, that getting that certificate. So, oh, what a relief. And I actually feel these days better. It's definitely getting better, the French. I should apply myself to it every day. I should be doing controlled practice every day. I should be keeping a notebook. I should be recording myself in French. I should get myself a one-to-one teacher or a speaking partner. So many things I should be doing that I'm not. So instead, I'm taking the long road, you could say. But I'm going to get there. But yeah, that was nice to know that I've kind of got to an intermediate level without making a lot of effort, to be honest with you. So it's taken my time, but I've got there. So there it is. I've got the certificate, which now goes into my dossier, which is part of my application for French citizenship. I don't know when it's all going to go through. It takes a long time. At the moment, I'm waiting for all of those birth certificates and things to come back with all those legal stamps on them. Then I need to get them translated by an official translator, which is going to cost money. Yeah, I'm not going to get the French passport in time for the end of March. It's not going to be in time, but it will come eventually. And then I can, I guess, relax a bit about Brexit, even though it's gonna be like a kick in the stomach for my country, I think. And you know, that's not me being unpatriotic. I'm patriotic. I love my country. You know, I love the good things about my country. And you know, being against Brexit is not being unpatriotic, it's not undemocratic. And all those arguments that you hear, which are mostly bullshit, you know, the arguments against, I mean, I understand the whole, the people have spoken, it's the people's choice, the right of the people, but the Leave campaign broke the law, and they lied to the public. People voted for Brexit for lots of different reasons. The Brexit that they're going to get is, for the most part, not what they voted for. I could go on and on and on about that, about why it's a bad idea. But anyway, it looks like I'm going to get a French passport. Imagine that. I'm going to be French. I'm not going to change my name. You do have the option when you get a French citizenship. You can sort of Frenchify your name. So I could become Luc instead of Luke. Luc, which is spelled L-U-C. And Thompson, I don't know what the French version of that would be, like Dupont. Maybe I could become Luc Dupont. Bonjour, bienvenue au le podcast de Luc Dupont. It would be weird, wouldn't it? So anyway, I guess the French version of me will be Luc Dupont or something, but no, Luc Thompson. Luc Thompson. Yes, I'm still going to be Luc Thompson. It'll be Luc Thompson in my French passport, of course. And don't worry, this is not going to become Luke's French podcast. My French is not quite ready for that yet. Yes. Luc Thompson. In France, they often can't spell my name because when I tell people my name, they write it down Thompson like the television, like the TVs, because there's a television manufacturer called Thompson. So they write Thompson, T-O-M-P-S-O-N. And I have to say, no, T-H. And then I say Thompson with a P because there's a P in my name. And this happens all the time. They say, what's your name? And I say Thompson with a P. And they write Pompson. Like, seriously, Thompson with a P, and they write Pompson, P-O-M-S-O-N. Pomson. Thompson with a P. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. So anyway, there you go. I'm going to be French, and I've got my certificate. Oh, next thing on this on the agenda for this rambling episode, which might become two episodes, my duck related error. I made a duck mistake. Duck, yes, the duck, the bird. Quack, quack, quack. Ducks. I made a duck related error in episode 555. Do you know what that error was? Any idea? Got a little itchy throat here. Just take my time. You're not going to blame me for taking my time in this episode, are you? And pausing sometimes just to cough or maybe have a little drink of coffee. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm drinking coffee. I still drink tea. Often it's tea in the morning, coffee in the afternoon, or coffee in the morning, tea in the afternoon. I don't know. Anyway, I drink both. My duck-related error. In episode 555, I talked to Raphael. And we ended up talking about Disneyland. And how there are weird, illogical mistakes in Disney cartoons. Like the fact that Mickey Mouse, his best friend is Goofy. Goofy is a dog. He walks upright and he wears clothes. But Mickey Mouse also has a pet who is a dog called Pluto. And so Pluto is there on all fours, naked, with a lead around his neck. And then there's Goofy, also a dog, standing up with clothes on. And Goofy must be thinking, Pluto, what are you doing? Get some clothes on. And also, we talked about how Donald Duck, not Daffy Duck. That's it. I said Daffy Duck. It's Donald Duck. And this is obviously very important to correct. I can't get my cartoon ducks mixed up. That's an unforgivable mistake. Although I do hope you forgive me. But it was brought to my attention on Twitter. I think someone wrote to me, said, "It's Donald Duck, not Daffy Duck." I would just like to say, yes, it is Donald Duck. You know, the white one. There's two cartoon ducks. There's Daffy Duck, who's black. I mean, I don't know if you have race in the duck world, if it's the same as it is in the human world. I'm not going to go there. He happens to have black feathers. That's Daffy Duck. And Daffy Duck is the one who goes, quick, 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 quick. How does Daffy Duck speak? Daffy Duck kind of speaks like this, doesn't he? He's got sort of a lisp. Oh, Luke, what are you talking about? Rambling. Daffy Duck. Let's see if we can find a bit of Daffy Duck. But we want the old Daffy Duck from the old Looney Tunes Warner Brothers cartoons. All right, so here we go. This is Daffy Duck from 1943. This is the black one. The Warner Brothers cartoons, absolutely brilliant. You have to admit, just classic entertainment. Let's hear Daffy Duck speak. Come on. Right. Right, so this may be the first ever Daffy Duck cartoon. And it's got... Who's that pig? Porky Pie? Is that his name? I don't remember. There's the pig, and he's hunting for ducks. Where's the sound gone? There we go. Here he is. This is Daffy Duck, and he's got that sort of lisp. He's got a sort of a lisp.
Duck shot. More duck shot.
Duck shot. Duck shot. Meaning that's like when you fire a shotgun, you can have different ammunition that goes in a shotgun. It could be shotgun pellets or some stuff like bits of metal, which sometimes is called duck shot. Stuff that you would use in a shotgun to try and shoot a duck. So anyway, that's Daffy Duck. He speaks like that.
Confidentially, those hunters couldn't hit the broad side of a duck.
Those hunters couldn't hit the broad side of a duck. So that's Daffy Duck. But what about Donald Duck? Because these are the ducks I got them mixed up, you know. So it's very important to clarify which one's Donald and which one's Daffy. Donald is from Disney. Daffy is from Warner Brothers. Let's hear a bit of Donald Duck. Whoa, loud. Come on. Okay, let's fast forward to when he starts talking. Does Donald Duck talk? So in this episode, Donald Duck is visited by his cousin, who's called Gus, and Gus appears to be a goose or something. Come on. Maybe there's no talking in Donald Duck. I can't remember. So Donald Duck is about to eat some soup, and the doorbell rings, and it disturbs him, and he's like, oh, God, I've got to go and answer the door. That's it. That's how Donald Duck's... I can't do it. I can't do his voice. You get the idea, though, right? So, obviously, I have to, clarify this mix-up. So I was talking about Donald Duck, not Daffy Duck. What was I saying? That Donald Duck, if you remember from the cartoons, he just wears a blue jacket and that's it. He's basically naked from the waist down. That's how he lives his life. He's just out and about naked with no trousers on, no pants. But when he has a shower or a bath, when he comes out, he has a towel wrapped around his waist. Why? It makes no sense. So anyway, I hate to get my duck names wrong. It is funny, though, isn't it, when you spot these sorts of inconsistencies in cartoons, like the logical inconsistency. Obviously, that's the joy of cartoons, and you're not really supposed to think about these things that much. But I like to do that. I like to overthink all these things. It's fun, isn't it? Another listener also pointed out another scene. Someone sent me a photograph in which Donald Duck and his three duck children are sitting down for dinner. And they're eating some kind of roast bird. It's like there's a big roast meal on the table with a bird that's been roasted. Is it a roast chicken or a roast turkey or maybe a roast duck or a goose? But there they are, all ducks sitting around the table with a big roast bird on the table. And what are they, cannibals? Is that what's going on? They're just cannibals? They're just going to eat one of their own? I don't know. So anyway, I just needed to clarify that and just fix that duck mistake that I made. Okay, good. We did that. We've done that. Good. All right. 1 hour and 6 minutes. Let's keep going. Responses to the Alan Partridge episodes. I did 3 episodes about Alan Partridge recently. And the good in those episodes, I explained some comedy and we went through it in quite a lot of detail. Some clips from episodes of Alan Partridge's TV show and stuff and went into quite a lot of detail. Those are episodes I had to prepare in advance, unlike this one. And you can see the difference. The Alan Partridge episodes, everything was like very organized. I put a lot of work in. This episode is quite disorganized. But with the Alan Partridge episodes, I was talking about how I was really wondering about what people would think and, are people going to understand it? Will you find it funny? I really didn't know. I thought maybe I'd just confuse everyone. But I feel like I've made a breakthrough with those episodes because I've had so many positive comments about those episodes. There was one person who wrote a comment saying that the comedy episodes weren't for him. So the vast majority of people wrote in saying, I really appreciated these episodes about Alan Partridge. I love Alan Partridge as a character. He's fascinating. Most people were saying that. A couple of people, one person said they didn't like the British comedy episodes because they didn't really understand the comedy. And so that made them feel disappointed. Okay. One or two people said they didn't like the moment in the first part where Alan made the child prodigy cry. I can understand that, but it wasn't a real child. I went through it in the episode. When I got the email from the teacher of the class in Japan, I also got one or two other comments saying, oh, I just couldn't really laugh when Alan made the child cry. I just, couldn't laugh at that. I understand why you might not be able to enjoy that moment. But the point of that moment was not that the child was crying. The point was that Alan on live radio slapped a child. So it's more, we're laughing at Alan and his patheticness and his inability to be modest in any situation, even to the point where he will go so far as to pathetically slap a child like it's like in a school playground or something. Like the way that children slap each other. I mean, what Alan did was, it was like he was a child. It's like he was like, at, you know, at school you get children, and you get children who are maybe a year or two older who bully the other kids. And it's the sort of thing that a childhood bully would have done rather than a BBC radio presenter. So that was the joke, really, rather than just, he slapped a child. No, it's more complicated than that. But on the most part, for the most part, on the whole, the response was very positive, which is great for me because it makes up for those painful moments in the past when I have failed to help my students to enjoy comedy, or at least I've felt like I've failed to help them enjoy it. I'm too sensitive probably about all this stuff. I think the key to helping people understand comedy is to pre-teach a lot of the details, explain a lot of things first, give as much context as possible in advance, then let them listen, and then break it down bit by bit, you know, word for word, in fact, because it's very hard to understand first time round. You need a lot of support to understand comedy like that. But I think you can start with support in episodes like that with me. Like, you could start with those three episodes about Alan Partridge where I'm kind of like holding your hand and taking you through it bit by bit. And then after that, you could probably start to watch more Alan Partridge without me and start to appreciate it more and more as you understand what, you know, how the character works and things like that. I think I'm going to do part four. I think I'll do Alan Partridge part four at some point, because it's just fun, isn't it? It's fun. And there's lots of English that you can learn from it. And I think it's really amazing to help people understand something on the level of a native speaker that previously they just couldn't understand at all. So imagine it's like opening a box for people, or it's like opening something up, opening it out for people and letting them see all of it. Also, responses to the Russian Comedy Club video. So if you remember in the episode I did recently with Amber and Paul, I think it was called Discussing Comedy and Culture with Amber and Paul, we watched a clip from a video by the Russian Comedy Club. That's a video which people send to me all the time. People send me that video a lot. They also send me the 11 video, which is the Scottish guys in the voice-activated lift, and the Scottish guys are trying to get to the 11th floor and the lift doesn't understand them. I like that sketch. It's very funny. It's clever. It's well written. It's not just people misunderstanding each other. It's also it starts to get into Scottish people's sense of frustration at, you know, being maligned as a member of the British Isles. Or I don't know. It starts to get into the details of like Scottish and English relationships and how the world sees Scotland and stuff. The other things that people send me are Carl Pilkington and Ricky Gervais teach English. That video, I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's a funny video. People send that to me all the time as well. And other things like, do you speak English? That sketch that I dealt with like in maybe one of the first episodes of this podcast. But lots of people send me these videos. So we talked about that video of the Russian Comedy Club. It's basically like three comedians. I guess they're Russian. One of them is meant to be an American radio presenter or TV presenter. And one of his guests is an English music producer. And the other guest is his Indian musician. And basically, the American host doesn't understand the English guy because the English guy speaks in this extremely exaggerated way. Which is, I guess, supposed to represent how English people sound. And then the Indian guy also speaks in this exaggerated Indian accent. And the idea is, I think, that the native... Well, what people tell me... See, the response that I had with it was, don't find it that funny because, you know, I don't really get it because I'm not Russian. I'm not in that context. So naturally, I'm not going to get it. But, I don't want to judge. I don't want to say that I think objectively it's bad, because I think that comedy is mostly subjective. You know, it just comes down to a question of taste. What some people find funny, other people don't, because they can't see it from this with the same eyes. And, you know, context is everything. But my first impression, and people ask me, what do you think of this video? And my first impression was, well, I don't really get it, I suppose. I mean, I think I understand the joke, which is that, you know, English people, Indian people are difficult to understand. But I always thought it was just like Russian people found them difficult to understand. But people have told me, so I've had two types of response to that, to me talking about that. The first response is from people saying, yeah, Russian Comedy Club is shit. It's just mainstream entertainment. Those guys used to be funny years ago, but these days they're just boring, bland, unimaginative, not very clever, and just crap. And it's just an example of like mass mainstream entertainment. And in the UK, we have mainstream comedy as well. And, you know, it's pretty shit as well, to be honest. It's kind of like lowest common denominator, dumbed down comedy, not very sophisticated, meant to appeal to a big audience. And so, you know, some people say it's just crap, basically. And so, you know, and they'd say, I'm Russian and I think it's terrible. And we have much more, we have much better comedy than that, you know, more sophisticated comedy that's maybe underground that, you know, people don't really know about, that's harder to find. So I'm sure that in Russia you do, you just like everywhere, you have like, you know, the more clever comedy and you've got the more mainstream comedy, right? So, you know, some people said it's mainstream comedy, it's sort of crap. And then other people have written to me saying, well, look, you don't really understand it, because actually, if you watch the entire video, you'll start to understand that the point of the video is that this is about how native speakers don't understand each other. That Russian people find it hilarious or ridiculous that, you know, because English is such a broad, is as a language is used by such a broad set of people, that Russian people find it hilarious that native speakers of this language might not understand each other. So in the sketch, the idea is the American guy doesn't understand the English guy. He doesn't understand the Indian guy. And, right? But then I kind of think, well, it's not really that true, because most of the time, native speakers do understand each other. I think, although some Americans do find it hard to understand non-American English. I don't know. The jury is still out on this, but I think my final point on that video will be it's a question of taste, and there's no accounting for taste. You can never really explain why some people like something and other people don't. But there it is. I think we've talked about it enough now and probably analysed it too much. It's just a funny little sketch. And it's, you know, it's quite amusing, actually. I find the performances more and more amusing. Certainly the English guy. I don't know what you're saying, I don't understand. I'm sort of starting to enjoy that performance, and weirdly now I listen to other English people, if I'm, you know, listening to the radio, and I start to notice actually English people, we are quite hesitant sometimes. Maybe we do sound like that. If you don't know any of the words in English, it just sounds like we're going we do sound a bit hesitant. So I don't know. Right, moving on. Talking of moving, actually, I wanted to say, yes, we're moving flat. We're moving house. The expressions that we'd use in English for that would be to move. For example, we're moving next week. To move out, we're moving out. To move flat or move house. So we're moving next week. We're moving out of the flat. We're moving out next week. To move in or to move into something. We're moving into a new flat. When do you move in? We're moving into the flat, next weekend, for example. So to move house or to move flat, to move in, to move out. So we are moving at some point in the next 4 weeks. We've got 4 weeks to get out of this place and to get into the other place. So basically that means goodbye, SkyPod. Oh. It's the end of an era. I'm not really crying. Oh, it's the end of the era. It's the end of an era. Maybe I will shed a tear. I don't know. When I actually do leave this place, I think I might get a bit emotional. I'm not now, because it still doesn't seem real somehow, because all the stuff is still here and we haven't actually got the keys to the other apartment yet. But maybe, I don't know, I might get emotional when I move out. I've been living here for 6 years now in this apartment. My wife and I have been living here for 6 years. And, you know, and our daughter's been living here for 10 months. We've had lots of experiences and memories, and lots of things have happened here. All the episodes of the podcast have recorded up here on the terrace there. All the magical moments that have happened, mainly on the terrace, especially when I've had Amber and Paul. Those moments of us chatting on the rooftop. It's going to be consigned to history, all that stuff. So goodbye, SkyPod. But the place that we're moving to is a better flat all round. Here in this apartment, we are up in the roof of the building, and the main room has the walls slope down from the ceiling. It's like living in a big tent. It's like living in a big triangle. You know what I mean? The ceiling, the walls come down, sloping down all the way down to the floor. And so as a fairly tall person, that does restrict the places I can actually move around in. So I'm constantly like crouching down when I'm walking around. We have some wooden beams that are quite low. So I'm constantly crouching down and trying not to bump my head. I bump my head every day. Pretty much every day I smack my head on something. The wall, a beam here, you know, something here, something there. That in our bathroom in this place, we've got one of those showers that's a bath as well. There's no shower curtain. We don't have space. There's no way to put a shower curtain in because the wall comes down like that. So you can't put a shower curtain in there. And so what happens is that I have to stand in one spot in the bath. I can't move to the left. If I do, then the water will spray onto the floor. I can't move to the right because if I do, I'll have to bend my neck. So I'm forced to stay in one little position and shower myself like that without moving. If I move my arm up too much, the water comes flying off the end of my elbow and goes onto the floor. I mean, it's incredibly inconvenient and annoying. I'm used to it now after 6 years of like showering without moving, really. And getting water everywhere. The new place we're going to move into, it's got a proper shower where you can actually go in and there's a door. You close the door and you're inside it. Oh, what luxury. And also there's more space. We're going to have, just a bigger room. It's a living room, kitchen combined. And it's open. There's much more space there. There's a lot more storage. And because the walls are not sloping, there's space for us to put shelves and cupboards. At the moment, where we are now, because the walls slope down, all of our stuff is stored down near the bottom. So we have all of our bookshelves and things are all down at floor level. And since our daughter is now beginning to walk and she's crawling around and stuff, everything is right there available. She can just pull all the books off, all of the objects on the shelves and things like that. All the stuff in the kitchen... A lot of our pots and pans are stored in things that are open. And, if we're not careful, she can get the pots and that she could have an accident. And basically, we've grown out of this place. The new place, yeah, bigger, more space. There's a bedroom for our daughter. There's a bedroom with more space for us. Because at the moment, we've got our bed in the main room and the bedroom is being used by our daughter. But so it's kind of like a studio apartment with a bedroom attached to it for the baby. But the new one, bedroom for our daughter, a bedroom for us, a proper living room with a nice kitchen with cupboards, proper cupboards, a proper shower, and a little balcony. We don't have a nice terrace where we can sit around, but there is a balcony that could fit a couple of chairs on it. So there is a little bit of outside space. I don't know what it'll be like to record podcasts up there. We will have slightly less privacy because here there's no one around on the terrace. There's no one around you. But the balcony, there are our neighbours sort of share the same balcony. They will share the same balcony as us. What else? And there is a little room on the top. There's a little staircase with a little room up there, which could be an office, could maybe feasibly be a very small bedroom, but I'm going to use it as my new SkyPod. So that's cool. I'm actually very excited to move. I'll be sad to leave this place behind. But it's going to be nice to move into another place. It's going to be more comfortable. It's going to be more expensive. But it will be more comfortable and more practical for everything. So that's good news. So I wonder what it's going to be like. I wonder what it'll be like for the podcast. We will see. We will see. I'll maybe do a video there when I'm properly installed myself, and you can have a little look at what it's like. I don't know. Well, I'm going to have my books and stuff in there. There's lots of shelf space on the wall. Maybe stick my guitars up on the wall and things like that. So anyway, the other thing is we've got a lot of work ahead of us in terms of moving all of our stuff to the new place. And you know, we've got a lot of stuff packed into this flat after 6 years of living here. So that's going to be chaotic and messy, of like packing everything in boxes and moving it all to the new flat. And then going up the stairs, we have to climb the stairs. There's no lift in the new building. So we have to just go up the stairs carrying all of our stuff. God knows how we're going to do it. So it could be 4 weeks or more of total chaos. I don't know how that's going to affect the podcast. I've moved flat a couple of times while, you know, in the time that I've been doing this podcast. The big move was when I moved from London to Paris. And I don't know if you remember listening to those old episodes. Around about episode 100, it was when I moved to France from London. And I was probably talking about how my entire life is a total disaster and total chaos, with all my possessions all strewn about all over the place, and my kitchen in various states of disrepair. So it could be similar levels of chaos this time. We will see. I don't know how that's going to affect the podcast, but hopefully it shouldn't be too disruptive, because I'm able to. The good thing about doing this is that, I mean, I've got my setup here in the SkyPod, but I can make this portable. I can just take my recorder and stick a more portable microphone in it and record anywhere. So hopefully it won't affect the podcast too much. We will see. But it's exciting. I'm looking forward to moving in. I was texting Amber and Paul today, and Amber said to me, "Oh, apparently you're moving." And she wrote an emoji with a tear running down her eye. She's like, "Oh, you're moving." Teardrop. And she was like, "Oh yeah, we should have a final goodbye episode to say goodbye to the SkyPod and the terrace." So perhaps I can get Amber and Paul here. Paul's in Canada at the moment, but maybe I can just get Amber, and hopefully Paul too, up here to record one final episode on the terrace before moving to new podcast headquarters. We'll see. Okay. Now, the final thing I wanted to say was, well, people ask me, "How's your wife?" She's fine. She's great. Thanks very much. In fact, I recorded an episode with her just the other day. People sometimes say, "You should get your wife back on the podcast." She was, in an episode which I recorded. It's a premium episode, because she's a premium person. So it will be a premium episode, and in that one, we're going to go through various phrases that she has learned from me after living with me for 6 years and being with me for nearly 9 years. She's learned quite a lot of English from me, as you can imagine, but we kind of distilled that down to just a series of phrases, like common phrases and sayings, which have stuck with us for years, because either I've used them a lot or she's heard my family use them, and she's learnt them and started using them herself. Phrases that she didn't know before, phrases that she'd never learnt at school, or little phrases which actually are quite difficult, quite tricky, but extremely useful in our daily lives. So there'll be a premium episode with her going through all those phrases. And you can listen to that soon, I hope. There may be two episodes, that conversation with my wife, and then another episode where I actually just clarify the phrases and give you a chance to test yourself and do some pronunciation drills and things with them. So that's coming up. But she's fine. Thank you for asking. And also the other question is, how's your daughter? She's great. We're very happy, very lucky that she is very smiley and lots of fun. She's hilarious. She makes us laugh every day. She's I don't know how to say it, really. She's developing fast. She's starting to stand up now. She can stand up on her own for about 10 seconds before she kind of drops, you know, before she falls over. She's just very funny, does lots of funny things. She's sleeping okay. Feeling very lucky. I hope that it carries on like this, that she continues to just be sweet and nice. I mean, eventually she'll become 13 years old and it'll probably be a nightmare. I don't know. But at the moment, things are fine. I expect people out there will be thinking, oh, just wait, Luke, just wait until she's two. When they get to two, that's when it all goes wrong. The terrible twos. She'll be having temper tantrums. She won't want to do this. She'll be pushing all the limits, testing you, seeing what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, maybe. But anyway, at the moment, she's really cute and sweet, so we're very happy about that. But she will be walking soon. Not really talking yet. She does say daddy. She definitely says daddy. My wife doesn't want to believe it, but she definitely says daddy. Like the other day, she was having a bath. My wife was giving her a bath. I came in and she definitely went, daddy, like that. Of course. So naturally, I'm feeling very proud. She has said mama maybe twice, but she says daddy every day. But it's amazing being a dad. I've been thinking about this quote from George Harrison. You know, George Harrison, one of the members of the Beatles. I heard George Harrison in an interview talking about being a father, and he said that it's very strange because when you become a dad, it's like you can, on one hand, you can become a child again. So it's like you relive your childhood in a way, because I'm playing with her and I see the world through her eyes. So it's like kind of reliving my childhood. But at the same time, I also get to see what it's like from my dad's point of view. So it's like these three things all at the same time. It's like weirdly experiencing three generations of experience at the same time. I get to see things as a child through my daughter's eyes. There's me, my experience. And then I kind of suddenly get more perspective of what it must be like or must have been like for my dad bringing up me. So now I'm much closer to my dad in a way, because now I know what it's like to be a dad. So it's like weird having these three generations of experience compressed into one, and there's me in the middle with the younger generation, older generation above me, having this global experience. It's really weird. It's kind of profound and great. I hope it stays like that. I hope that she continues to be lovable and adorable, and that she doesn't just annoy us by being a brattish teenager or something. Who knows? You don't know, do you? You just don't know what's going to happen. All you can do is just try and enjoy the moment and just be grateful for what you've got. Yeah. Ladies and gents, thank you for listening to this long and rambling episode, an hour and 30 minutes. Thank you also for watching the video in the app or online if you're a premium subscriber. Thanks for being a premium subscriber, by the way, and supporting the podcast. If you'd like to sign up, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium and you can get all of the premium stuff there as well. Okay? All right. Good. Speak to you again soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.